question that we're dealing with this evening has to do with withdrawing fellowship. That's never something we eagerly anticipate, but we do teach on it because it is biblical. It's probably been 3 or 4 years since we dealt with something primarily as an entire lesson on this subject. So the question is asked, how do the elders determine who to disfellowship from the church? Is attendance or lack thereof the only major factor, or are there other factors that influence the decision? What exactly does the Bible say about withdrawing fellowship? Well, the first thing that we want to notice pertains to the inclusion of the elders in this. First of all, whether a congregation has elders is irrelevant. The church is supposed to withdraw fellowship when it is necessary. They have an obligation to do so. And in fact, in the passage that we just read from 1 Corinthians 5, 9 through 13, we do not have any record of the church in Corinth having elders. Nevertheless, Paul commanded them to withdraw from a brother. But when a congregation does have elders, they have the responsibility to take the lead in this matter because they are the ones who must give an account for the flock. As we read in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17, obey those who have the rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls. As those who must give an account, let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. It is interesting that, and I don't know if this is just peculiar to us, but maybe other congregations have the same thing, but I have noticed a reluctance on the part of some in placing membership. They need to be under the oversight of somebody who will watch for their souls. And so first of all, they need to be members. And then second of all, they need to be cooperative and productive members so that they can be given a good report of. Now, because they have this responsibility does not mean that a member of the congregation should not ask a question about someone or suggest that, you know, this brother is or sister is wayward, and is there some reason why nothing has been done? That's perfectly appropriate to ask. To answer the question, there are both biblical and personal concerns that are attached to each individual. Not all case is the same. Now, most of our withdrawals of fellowship are for people who have quit coming to worship with the saints. That does not mean there are no other reasons, just because that seems to be the most common reason. It means that most of the times the reasons cited in 1 Corinthians 5, 9 through 13 are not in evidence. That is, we have no knowledge of somebody who is guilty of any of these things. And so generally it just ends up being and regarding attendance. However, that's not 100% the case. One congregation withdrew from a brother because he was a railer or a reviler, as the New King James says. He had that as a practice and he refused to quit. Some have been withdrawn from because of alcoholism. The man in Corinth was living with his father's wife and apparently was still attending, and something needed to be done. His was not necessarily non-attendance. His problem was he was attending and living immorally, and people knew it. Now, there may be people attending who are living immorally and nobody knows it, But in this case, they did, and they needed to do something concerning that. There are other moral transgressions besides the list in 1 Corinthians. For example, in Galatians 5, 19 through 21, there's one of the most extensive lists that you would find, including adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like. Paul hasn't listed everything possible. There are some things that are going to be similar to these, and they need to be considered also. Anyone who will not repent of these moral issues, and these are all of a moral nature, is not putting the Lord first and does not care that he is scandalizing by his behavior his brothers and sisters. How does that make the church look when someone is staggering around on Saturday night in a community and then serving on the Lord's table the next morning, as one preacher told me was occurring in a small town where he was? The townspeople knew it. And this obviously scandalizes and hurts the church in that area. Imagine knocking on someone's door and saying, "We're from whatever, Church of Christ," and immediately they roll their eyes and say, "Oh yeah, the place that has drunkards." That's not a good sign. That's not a good reputation to have. And so the church must be able to say, well, that person is no longer a member here. We have withdrawn fellowship from him because of bad behavior. We don't agree with this behavior. The Lord doesn't agree with this behavior. And so he is no longer a member. So that's the first thing that we wanted to look at from 1 Corinthians, and that is the moral reasons that we have to withdraw fellowship from someone. Now we want to go to the second reason. Moral waywardness is the first. Second is doctrinal error. We talked a little bit about that this morning and why it's important for the people who do this to be rebuked. Because if their teaching is allowed to continue, they're going to draw people away from the truth and be stumbling blocks. And as we read from Luke 17, 1 and 2, it would be better that you had never been born than to cause brothers and sisters to stumble from the truth. We all know how Paul felt towards Judaizing teachers. In Galatians 1, 6 through 9, we've looked at this several times in the studying of the epistles, and Paul is going to say some more things in Philippians chapter 3 about these dogs, these mutilation, as he calls them, who were causing havoc in the church. And so if you teach a different gospel, you must expect that brethren are going to withdraw fellowship from you. You cannot teach something that is clearly and fundamentally error and not expect someone to notice. So here's the point. Can anybody imagine that Paul would fellowship these false teachers? Can you imagine he would go and have dinner with the Judaizing teachers, or say, "Hey, I'm going to schedule these guys on a lectureship. They're a little bit off on the gospel, but they're such dynamic speakers." That's what some brethren have done with false teachers, but I can't